Yes, today I am joined by Ben Golliver, Washington Post NBA writer, co-host of the Open Floor and GOAT podcast. What's going on, Ben?
Not too much, man. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
Everything's good. Everything's good. Talking about the NBA. Love it. Can love it. Not too much better than that.
No, I'm with you. I mean, it's my whole life. Honestly, I try to structure my whole life around talking about and watching NBA games, writing about NBA games.
Right.
We've got a pretty good season here. I think there's no clear-cut, title favorite. We've got a pretty good race. There's not one super team everybody's trying to dethrone.
Yes.
I think you've got a lot of big-time superstars playing at or near the top of their game.
Right.
And you've got a guy like LeBron who's hanging on for dear life and not willing to give up or sacrifice his throne either. So for me, it's just storylines abound.
Right. Yeah, and Kawhi did everyone a favor when he chose the Clippers over the Lakers and not make a super team like the Warriors were last year when Kevin Durant was healthy. So he did everyone a favor. This season is shaping out to be one of the closest in years. I can't wait for the Western Conference and our Eastern Conference Finals. They're going to be something to see this year.
Oh, no question. I mean, I'm here in Los Angeles, and so, I mean, every night practically, we're getting playoff previews, whether it's, Clippers versus Rockets or Lakers versus Pelicans the other week. I mean, it could be a first-round playoff preview.
Right.
To me, the Western Conference, there's not a bad matchup on deck. If the playoffs started today, you'd have four awesome series.
Yeah.
I think in the Eastern Conference, there's probably a couple teams in that first round grouping that we'd all like to see maybe punted out, a little bit more quickly. I don't think we need to see a ton from the Brooklyn Nets or the Orlando Magic or anything like that. But
Right. Once
we get to the second round, especially if we can get a Toronto Boston series or, Milwaukee Miami could be fun. Milwaukee Philly in the second round, if that shapes up, could be fun.
Oh yeah.
We're counting down here. I know we're kind of in the dog days of the NBA season. And so we really get to prime time, but I can't wait to get there.
Or if Sixers can move to that 5 seed, we have Miami, Philly the first round. That'd be crazy because I would love to see that, especially with Ben Simmons being injured. If he's not 100%, Philly could be in trouble because they need him and Ben Simmons healthy. And also Embiid is also kind of hurt right now. So without those two, I think that would give Miami an extra edge, and he just picked up Iguodala also.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would be the Jimmy Butler revenge tour for sure, right? And I mean, it's like he's been challenging the manhood of his teammates like everywhere he goes, whether it's, Minnesota or Philadelphia. And so, that's the ultimate test, right? It's like, all right, first of all, who's healthy? But then second of all, who's going to be able to do it in the playoffs? There were so many minutes, moments in last year's playoffs where Butler kind of had to save the day for Philly.
Yeah.
With or without Ben Simmons, I think that's the biggest question facing the Sixers is like, okay, in the key moments, who's going to be your takeover guy?
Yeah.
And can it be a center? That's a really tough thing in the modern NBA these days. I mean, outside of a guy like Nikola Jokic, there aren't too many centers who are really able to consistently exert themselves late in games and kind of be the center of attention for a team's offense. And so I think that's what that series would come down to. It's sort of like Butler versus Embiid, who wins those clutch minutes. And then I guess, also who's supporting cast really shows up.
Yeah, we all know Shake Milton just had a career high. The Sixers may try to depend on him more, but we'll see if he can duplicate that success he had as his last game for his career high. But, I mean, like I said, they're going to need Ben Simmons a lot. But we'll see how that shakes out. Also, they have Norrell Pell. Well, he's not averaging that many points a game, but his defensive presence is a big factor on the boards. So they have a little depth, but they need those two because they're top heavy. I believe they really are.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I was at Shake Milton's career high here in LA. I mean, it was remarkable. It felt like the guy couldn't miss, but that's to me, that's a cute story, right? It's a nice find.
Yeah.
It's not like a sustainable playoff strategy.
Right.
And I think especially when you're looking at teams who are going to be able to game plan you for you night after night within the series.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the funniest part about Shake Milton's big game was like the whole Clippers bench were looking around as it was happening, saying like, who is this guy? Like, why wasn't this guy on the scouting report? You could just tell how surprised they were. And as he was building his momentum over the course of that game, they started to make some adjustments. But, I think if you're Philly, that lack of a black backcourt playmaker has been an issue for them really all year.
Right.
And that's where Simmons comes in, as you're mentioning. And I think, frankly, in the playoffs, you have to be able to have your playmakers be shot makers, too. And
exactly.
I think that's still a question, even if Simmons is healthy and on the court.
Right. So you joined the Washington Post in 2018 as NBA writer. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background?
Yeah, man, lifelong basketball fan. I was born and raised in Beaverton, Oregon, kind of home to Nike. So I think that gave me a lot of exposure to the sport at an early age. I started writing about the Portland Trailblazers in 2007 when they won the number one pick in the draft. And it was, you know, Odin versus Durant. The name of my blog was Draft Kevin Durant. So, like, you know, it was ultimately unsuccessful. I didn't convince them to do what I wanted. But, right. You know, I think history kind of smiled on me on that one and just kind of went from there to covering the Blazers. And then, you know, kind of hopped into a national role with CBS Sports in 2010. Spent about 6 years at Sports Illustrated after that. And then now I'm at the Post where, you know, I'm, like I said, I'm based in L.A. and just cover the league, you know, as thoroughly as I can from here. So it's been kind of a dream ride, fun ride. And for me, it's really just been about, you know, a lifelong, you know, passion for the sport. You know, grew up playing it. My dad was a high school basketball player and went to Michigan State at the same time as Magic Johnson. So I think he kind of got me into it at a very, very early age. And, you know, I've been like that ever since.
So growing up in Portland, were you a Portland Trailblazers fan, or you just love the game, as you just said?
Yeah, you know, growing up, like, I was, like, right smack in the age of being, like, a Michael Jordan stan, you know?
Okay.
I'm, like, in my mid-30s right now. And so, like, you know, I was all in on the Space Jam stuff, all in on the Dream Team. I mean, all of it was just sort of, like, pumped into my veins. And, like I said, I think being, you know, near that Nike headquarters and how, you know, their close relationship with Jordan, I just feel like I was probably brainwashed at a young age to follow him. So, you know, certainly I liked the Blazers when I was a kid, but I really got into more just sort of like the Jordan worship stuff, you know, especially in my early teenage years.
Right.
And then, you know, I went to college back east. So, you know, I was kind of detached from the team for a while, but I think it gave me a good perspective because when I came back to cover them, I do think some people, when they cover one particular team, they do it because, like, that's been their favorite team their whole life and they're obsessed with the team and they want the team to succeed and everything else. And that wasn't exactly my relationship with the Blazers. To me, it was more like, oh, this is an awesome entryway into this league and this sport that I've always loved. You know, certainly, like, I knew how important that organization was, the local community there, knew hundreds of Blazers fans, like basically everyone who grows up there who likes basketball is a Blazers fan. So for me, it was a great community. It was a great launching pad. I wrote for a site called Blazers Edge for, you know, I don't even know, like 6, 7, 8, maybe even 9 years, you know, kind of providing beat coverage about that team. And I really enjoyed it. But to me, I think it was always about, you know, my long-term focus pretty quickly became, all right, let's cover the league as a whole.
Right.
You know, it's just a different way to do it, a different focus and viewpoint. That's kind of led me where I am today.
Can you remember what influenced you to want to get into journalism?
Well, I backdoored into it, man. I'll tell you, like, it was just a light bulb moment. You know, I was working a desk job, you know, doing like sales and marketing for a small business, and the Blazers won the draft lottery, you know, and that, you know, I came home immediately and I was like, wow, I knew what kind of an opportunity this was for the organization.
Right.
You know, at that point, Odin hadn't had his injury issues yet, so it was clear they were going to get a franchise player. They already had Brandon Roy and LaMarcus Aldridge, so you could start to see, like, oh, this could be a young core that wins a title.
Okay.
And so it was like, you know, almost like a stock market launch. Like, you just knew it was going to take off.
Right.
So I started my blog that day. Like I said, I called it Draft Kevin Durant, and I wrote all these essays. You know, some of them were even like college term paper style essays about why the Blazers should take Durant. I mean, I went really above and beyond because I was just feeling confident that, like, he was going to be the right fit and he was going to be a very, very marketable player. And I thought, to me, that was what was so important.
Right.
You know, the Blazers had been coming off a really tough time of their franchise. You know, people called it, like, quote unquote, jail Blazers. And they had been losing a lot of games. They had a lot of troubles with the law. And there was just a real fractured relationship between the community and the organization.
Okay.
And to me, you know, Brandon Roy arriving started to put those pieces back together. But I really saw that draft pick as being, like, you know, a potential monumental turning point for the sport in the city. So, that's what got me writing. You know, I went to college for creative writing. I didn't go for journalism.
Okay.
I've never taken a journalism class. You know, I've talked to journalism classes as, like, a guest speaker more than I've ever been a student.
Right.
So I had to learn a lot of the journalism stuff kind of on the fly.
Okay.
But to me, what got me into it was, the Kevin Durant draft pick. And I just, you know, it's kind of been a wild ride ever since, but yeah, you know, I started requesting credentials. My first year was 07, 08. The Blazers went on a really long winning streak that year, right around the same time I first got in the door.
Okay.
And so I was hooked, you know, because right. you could understand, you know, the excitement at the Moda Center or the Rose Garden, as it was called back then.
Right.
And it's a young team starting to figure things out and the fan base is falling in love with them. It was just a really good time to kind of be, you know, thrown into the deep end.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of other seasons since then that have not gone so well for them or some of these other teams I've covered, whether it's the Clippers or the Lakers. So I think from that standpoint, I just got really lucky. You know, I started dipping my toe in the water at precisely the right moment.
Okay. You write about it. You also speak about it. You're the co-host of the Open Floor podcast and the GOAT podcast. You talk about that experience and what those shows bring.
Yeah, it's another thing where, like, I guess my message to people would just be, like, if you're interested in the media, just, like, keep an open mind. Because I always had done, like, radio hits, you know, yeah. for years and years and years.
Okay.
Never really imagined myself having my own show. And Sports Illustrated came to me just about 5 years now and said, hey, are you interested in, you know, doing a podcast? And I was, like, right. pretty down on the idea. I was like, oh, it sounds like a hassle. Are you going to be paying me more for it? Oh, you just want me to do more work? And
right.
I didn't necessarily, like, buy into the idea, but... you know, Andrew Sharp got hired at Sports Illustrated. Basically, as part of his job, he was going to run the show. And I said, all right, well, he's asking me to come on as a guest and I'll go on there and help him out. Right. And he just kept asking and kept asking. And pretty soon I realized, oh, wait a minute, they just made me the co-host. I didn't exactly, you know, figure it out as they were unveiling the scheme on me.
Okay.
But he's a really nice guy. We've always had great chemistry. Especially, you know, we tend to disagree about everything, which I think helps on podcasts.
Yes, so, it does. It does.
yeah, for sure. So it just kind of built from there and we got into a nice rhythm and groove and built up an audience. And, you know, we actually went independent earlier this year. So that's the show is called Greatest of All Talk. And, you know, him and I just, you know, we get on basically twice a week and we yell at each other and scream about NBA topics and all that stuff. And
okay.
it's a lot of fun. And I'm lucky to still do the Open Floor one. With Sports Illustrated, where, you know, Michael Pina, people probably know him as an NBA writer
right.
At SB Nation. And we take maybe a more newsy or analysis approach on that show
okay.
Where we're trying to run down, you know, the basics of the NBA week. But for me, you know, the podcasting stuff comes naturally. It's like I'm talking about the NBA all day, every day anyway. So right. I might as well be doing it on a show where people can listen and engage. And that's been the right. coolest part for me is just to know that there's NBA fans across the globe. You know, I've heard from yeah. people on basically every single continent who have NBA takes or they want to argue or they want to, you know, ask a question. And that's the coolest part, because I think no matter where you grow up, whether it's Beaverton, Oregon, New York City, you know, LA, whatever it might be, you know, it could be Hong Kong, right. it could be Romania. You know, I'm hearing from fans everywhere. And to me, that's like the most validating and gratifying part of podcasting.
Right. The NBA standings, the East and the West are shaking up. But we're seeing who's going to be currently in the playoffs. I mean, in the East, we have Milwaukee, who's ran away with the East again. We don't know what happened last year. They ran away with it again, but we'll see. This year, Toronto doesn't have Kawhi. Out of the East and the West, could you say who's your biggest surprise?
Yeah, I mean, there's been some surprises of various levels at different points of the conference. When I look at the East, probably the team that I thought was going to be the worst that's like exceeded expectations by the most is probably the Indiana Pacers. Okay. And I'm not sure it's really going to matter. Like, I mean, they're probably going to lose in the first round of the playoffs anyway, kind of like they always do. But I thought this was going to be a real – you know what I mean? Like, they're just kind of that classic mid-tier team, right?
Yeah, winning.
But I thought it was going to be a real step-back season for them. Like, I thought there was a real chance they missed the playoffs because, you know, they change up their whole core. They lose Bogdanovich. Oladipo's yeah, out yeah. injured. And I think we saw a big time, you know, breakout season from Domantas Sabonis. I was very excited to see him get the All-Star nod. I know a lot of people
yeah.
kind of chuckled at him. Oh, is he really an All-Star? I mean, to me, he really earned it for keeping them afloat.
Yes,
they've
he
gotten,
did.
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
they've gotten a good play from Brogdon basically all season long. So to me, they've been one surprise. I would say the Raptors, you know, I expected them to be closer to that 4-5 tier in the Eastern Conference, and for them to kind of rise up and be battling with Boston for that 2 seed has been a pleasant surprise too.
Right.
And they ran off that huge long winning streak, you know, back in January, which I don't think anybody saw that coming. So kudos to them. I think in the West, the biggest surprise is the Oklahoma City Thunder. I didn't see any best case scenario where they were in the playoffs. And right now they're not even that far away from challenging for the two seed. I mean, they're right there in the middle of a pretty crowded mix.
Right.
You know, you look at Chris Paul, incredible season. I think Sam Presti's got to be the executive of the year for keeping the team afloat as he did, and also getting so many draft picks in those trades for Russell Westbrook and Paul George to be able to pivot and continue winning after losing a former MVP and a top three MVP finisher in Westbrook and Paul George is just nuts. And so to me, he should get the Executive of the Year award. And I think the Thunder are probably the biggest surprise in the West for me.
Yes. When CP3 went to OKC, there was talk that he wouldn't even play. Then they talked about moving his contract, but his contract was so heavy, no one wanted to take it on. But yeah, CP3 definitely helped OKC stay afloat. And like I said, there's a 6-seed right now, so that's a big surprise in the West, definitely.
Yeah, and I think and it's a problem with basketball Twitter. It's like the moment a guy is past his prime, now he's washed, right? And that kills me. It's like, all right, we know Chris Paul was a better basketball player 2 years ago. There's no question. But guys don't go from 100 to 0 overnight. Just like young players, when they improve,
yeah.
I mean, yes, there's occasional big time breakouts, but usually the improvement comes gradually year to year, right?
Yeah.
Like for example, with Jason Tatum, like I think that he's been spectacular these last 2 months for Boston, but like we've seen him add stuff since he came into the NBA, get himself more comfortable, step forward at various moments. Everything starts to build to the right place, and then boom, then you have the big moment.
Right.
And it's the same thing for older players. Like, you know, Chris Paul, he's not going to decline overnight. And you know, I still think I really imagine like what could this Houston Rockets team look like if they hadn't made that trade. I mean, they've been playing very well here recently, so maybe they don't have quite as much regret there. But you know, I think that it was a case where, you know, personality reasons broke up him and James Harden rather than basketball reasons. I still thought he had a lot of basketball left in him, and he's really showed that this season.
Right. Right now, the Lakers are in first in the West. Do you think it matters if they hold on to the one seed and get home court all the way through? Because they have a winning record away from Staples and at Staples.
Yeah, well, so I think, first of all, the fascinating part with the home court in the West is that the Western Conference Finals could easily be Lakers-Clippers, and so it's the same building. Right?
You're right.
That could really throw a wrinkle into it. But here's the even more interesting thing. The Lakers fans are probably going to buy up all the tickets. So even if it's a Clippers home game, that series could easily wind up being kind of played in front of a majority Lakers crowd for seven games. So that's just like a weird thing that people should keep in the back of their mind. The Lakers will keep the one seed. Nobody's going to catch them. I mean, they've got enough of a cushion here, and you know they're going to have enough winnable games on the stretch that they're going to be the one seed.
Right.
But I think the real question is, are they the best team in the West? Are they the best team for the playoffs in the West? And to me, they're not.
They're not the deepest. I know that. I think the Clippers are the deepest. They have a lot of pieces they implemented. Like, they just got Reggie Jackson, for one. They got to implement those pieces, which they're trying to do. But I think the Clippers are the deepest team.
I'm right there with you. Not only are they the deepest, I think they're the best prepared for the playoffs. I think they can play big. They can play small. They have two playmaking wings. They've got shooters at every position.
Lou Williams.
They've got they've got, you know, Montrezl Harrell, who can play the small ball style if you need to against Houston.
Right.
And they can go even smaller than that if they really want to. So I think they've got the right defensive personnel. They match up better with Houston stars and with the Lakers stars than vice versa. So to me, I would actually have, as the favorite to come out of the West, I would have it be the Clippers.
Yeah, I want to see this as the Western Conference Finals, but we may not get that. That might be a second round matchup, which would be crazy, because they might be crowning the NBA champion in the second round, maybe. But well, they got to play though. But they got to play. What do you think?
I'm with you. I think it's gonna be okay. I think the Clippers, to me, the Clippers have been like kind of jogging the whole season, right?
Yeah.
I think they have a very clear eye on the standings, and I think they're going to be able to kind of manipulate it and keep it so that they avoid that fourth seed.
Yeah.
I just think that they have enough talent that they almost control their own destiny a little bit.
Now,
whether they get home court against Denver, that's trickier, you know? So, like, they might have to go on the road there in the second round to win that series. But to me, if I had to bet, like, when do the Lakers and Clippers face off, I think it's going to be a Western Conference final showdown.
Yeah, I think a lot of people want to see that, the battle for L.A. That could also be a motivation for the Clippers, knowing that if they get past the Lakers, they'll have home court advantage if they come out. because if they get on a good run for the rest of the season and get their record up, they could eventually have home court advantage in the finals, depending on if the Bucks don't come out of the East. But we'll see, because the way the Bucks are playing, the fastest two to clinch playoff spot in NBA history. I'm sorry. So we'll see if they can make it happen or not. So
the Bucks, to me, they're the best story of the whole season. And I think Giannis has got to be MVP. I mean, Coach Bud's getting no Coach of the Year love, because I think, he wins it last year, and they're good again. He should be in the Coach of the Year conversation. I would give Sam Presti the Executive of the Year, but John Horst probably deserves some love in that one. And I think Giannis should be Defensive Player of the Year too, because they've had the best defense all season long, and he's the most important piece. Their season and the fact that they clinched, as you mentioned, it's just nuts, man. Like, 70 win pace potentially. And like, here's the thing. I mean, in the first round, doesn't matter if they play the Nets or the Magic, that's going to be a sweep. Right. I mean, they're just going to take care of that so fast.
Right.
Second round, if they somehow get the Pacers the Sixers, I think that's going to be over pretty quick in five. Now, Miami showed this week when they played head-to-head that Bam Adebayo, he's a pretty interesting defensive piece to put on Giannis.
Right.
But I still think that they would be able to get through Miami fairly quickly. I mean, to me, this could be a situation where Milwaukee kind of boat races through that Eastern Conference playoffs. And now it sets up where whoever's left standing in the West, whether it's like the Lakers or the Clippers, or some people might want to put the Rockets in there, I mean, they might be getting there kind of battered and bruised and exhausted.
Right.
Meanwhile, Milwaukee's sitting there like, hey, we made it through like 12-3 or 12-4 through the Eastern Conference. We're ready to roll in the finals. So I think that's another just factor to keep in mind of, the relative difference in terms of the challenges to get to the finals. When we look ahead to that potential matchup.
Right. Do you think Miami could give someone a real run for their money with the acquisition of Iguodala? Because he's not even played a whole season. So he's relatively fresh, but he's implementing himself back into the speed of the game. You think, depending on the matchup, he could be the difference maker in the series again?
Well, so here's the thing. If you're going to stop Giannis in the playoffs, you have to have you want to do it with one player as much as possible. So you have to find a guy who can keep with him from a quickness standpoint, a strength standpoint, a shot blocking standpoint, and not get into big time foul trouble.
Yeah.
And there are so few players who kind of check all those boxes. That's why when most defenses have to double team him, or when he gets into the paint, they have to swarm him. And that's kind of like what sets up the shooters.
Yeah.
What's amazing about Bam though, and why Miami is such an interesting playoff team, is that it's not like he can handle Giannis one-on-one forever, but he can really do a nice job in long stretches. And so I think that's what makes them so dangerous to a team like Milwaukee. But at the same time, I thought it was just a tough game for Milwaukee this week. Their shooters weren't there. Giannis didn't play particularly well. They were on the road. It was a back-to-back. So, I mean, they have some built-in excuses there. Miami has been another one of those surprise teams for me.
Right.
But are they really equipped right now to make the conference finals there? I'm not so sure. You know, I do think they're going to be a tough out. But to me, they're kind of like that tough out team as opposed to like a real threat to the very best teams in the East.
Right. Well, I think the Sixers don't want to see Miami right now, so that's my thing.
Well, the Sixers don't want to see anybody right now. I mean, they need to go see the doctor. I mean, that's their problem.
Right.
Like, everybody's hurt. And this is the trickiest part. It's hilarious. I mean, they almost might need to hang a championship banner for that Christmas Day win over Milwaukee, because in that one game, they showed their championship formula, right? It's like Embiid's the best player on the court.
Right.
The shooters decide to show up and really do it. They're able to take away the paint from Giannis, thanks to Embiid's presence, and everybody's happy. Everybody's fun. They want to celebrate, and it's just like this great holiday. Right.
Yeah.
But since then, it's just been completely up and down. It's the drama. It's the questions about Brett Brown. It's the injuries. It's the fit issues and the lack of shooting on a lot of nights. And there's just so much kind of bad energy around that group. And I do think if they have to play a team like Boston or Toronto or Miami, all three of those teams have very clear identities. They know exactly who they are. And we've been watching Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid play together for years, and we still don't know who they are together, right?
Right.
And I think that's the biggest question, is like, once the pressure comes, your identity is going to be revealed. And I just think there's too much inconsistency and unreliability to the Sixers. I'm not writing them off forever.
Right.
But, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they're a team that winds up going home in the first round. And I would be stunned if they make the conference finals.
Yeah, the Sixers, they do play different when either one of those players aren't on the floor. Because we know when Embiid not on the floor, we can see Ben Simmons being more aggressive. But they're on the floor together. Sometimes there's miscommunication. But they have to get it together because playoffs are coming up very, very soon.
Yeah, I think they're running out of time. I think that's the problem. And with Simmons, it's a real question of like, okay, do you even come back? Like, what's the upside? You know, are you going to really like push yourself through a back injury and try to kill yourself for a playoff run that may not be going anywhere,
right,
versus do you just give yourself the whole summer to get your body right and try again next season? And potentially maybe there's a trade, so you're trying to get next season somewhere else. I mean,
yeah.
I think they're really at a crossroads in terms of that franchise. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if one of their stars and Brett Brown are both gone by the start of next season.
Yeah, I think if they have an early exit this year, say in the first round, I think there's going to be some major changes because they've been trusting the process, but they're ready for the process to pay off. So so we'll definitely see.
We've been hearing a lot about this process. It
yeah,
seems
for
like
a while.
It never really pays off, does it?
Right. I think if both of the one seeds in the East and West pan out, and the Bucks come out of the East and the Lakers in the West, I would go to the Lakers in the finals because I think they can disrupt. They'll find a way to disrupt Giannis enough to keep him contained, but I know they can't completely contain him. But the Bucks shoot a lot of threes, and if Lakers can make the Bucks be a half court team, which the playoffs are, I think I can see the Lakers coming out, especially with LeBron. We know LeBron plays downhill, and once he gets into playoff mode, there's no stopping him, even in year 17. Like, he's averaging, what, 30 down there right now? So I would pick the Lakers over the Bucks in the finals. That would be my pick if that came out.
It would be a fascinating matchup. I mean, the most interesting thing to me is that Giannis would probably guard LeBron, and LeBron probably wouldn't guard Giannis, right?
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
So that actually could play to Lakers' benefit because now LeBron's a little bit more saved from an energy standpoint. But
yeah,
if Giannis is playing at sort of his peak ability,
right,
it could be a situation where he disrupts LeBron more than the Bucks are able to disrupt him.
True.
So that would be just an incredible headlining matchup.
Right.
But you also have some pretty interesting history between those two teams and the contrast between the two teams because
right,
before Giannis got there, Milwaukee was like the most boring, overlooked team ever, right? Like no
True.
One cared about them for like 25 straight years. They're small market, Midwest team. They never get any attention. And then meanwhile, you've got the big market Lakers winning title after title.
Right.
And, you know, glamour, glitz, and all that stuff. On top of that, you have the shared history of the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar trade, right? Because he comes up and starts in Milwaukee, and what
right,
does he want to do? Just like every other superstar, force his way to California and get back to the LA Lakers. So
right,
there's some interesting just contrast between those two organizations that would make it, you know, really, really fun and kind of a juicy series between the two of them. And also, not to diminish the Clippers here, if it's Bucks Clippers, then you have Giannis versus Kawhi rematch. And that's going to be, you know, sensational too, after how well Kawhi played in last year's Eastern Conference Finals. So
right,
to me, it's like we can't go wrong. You know, if Milwaukee versus either one of those LA teams would be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a matchup they come. If Giannis was on LeBron, that would leave who's going to stop AD if AD is completely healthy. I don't see anyone on the Bucks that can that will able to stop AD. I don't see that. But that would be
It's tricky. I mean, they probably try to use Middleton on him at times, but he's undersized, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Can you push him out away from the basket? That's kind of your hope. I mean, they do have Brook Lopez, who does a great job as a kind of a team defender, keeping people away from the basket. But
right,
we've actually seen in previous series, you know, Brook Lopez can kind of be exploited a little bit if your team can shoot. And the Lakers have some shooters as well where, you know, you can kind of like stretch him out
right,
and bring him away from the hoop and create some opportunities. So, yeah, I think, I mean, the matchups both ways would be really, really interesting in that potential finals.
Right.
And I think if you're the NBA, that's what you're rooting for, right? I mean, don't you want LeBron versus Giannis, the two all-star captains?
Yeah,
you know,
it.
Sort of like the legend. I mean, to me, it would almost be like Magic versus Mike in the 1991 finals. You know,
right,
I think it would have that kind of a vibe to it where Giannis is trying to get over the hump for the first time. LeBron's the established superstar. Big market Lakers organization, you know, kind of carrying the day. I could see there being really, really good ratings for that series.
Right. Zion Williamson, the hype around him is ridiculous. Not that it's not due, but can you speak on the Rookie of the Year race and how he's only been back 15 games, even though he's averaging, I believe, 25 5, maybe off by 1 point. But he's averaging like 24, 25, and 15 games. And he's rightfully moved up on a rookie ladder, but he's right under Ja, and Ja has Memphis in the A spot right now.
Well, here's the thing, and I think that this is not any disrespect to Ja Morant, but Zion is a better player,
right,
making a bigger impact with better stats than Ja Morant, you know? And so the only thing that you can say that about why Zion shouldn't be the rookie of the year is that he missed half the season. That's completely a legitimate argument. If you want to hold that against him, like, by all means do it.
Right.
But I think, you know, at the same time, if we're being fair, like, it's just, you know, Zion is already a great player. He's not elite. He's not a top five player, but he's a great player.
Right.
And with Ja, I think he's still in that category for me of good to very good.
Okay.
And he is going to be a great player in the very near future. I mean, if both of these guys are all-stars next year,
yeah,
it would not surprise me in the slightest. But there's a gap between how well those guys are functioning on a night-in and night-out basis.
Yeah.
I do think this playoff race is fascinating because we could very easily see New Orleans knock Memphis out of that playoff spot. You know, they're only, I think, three games back, three and a half games back.
Yeah.
And Memphis has a much tougher schedule than New Orleans does. So if Zion winds up, you know, putting up these huge numbers like you're describing,
right,
if New Orleans takes away Ja's playoff spot, then I do think you're going to hear some people making the case for Zion as Rookie of the Year.
Right.
Is that totally deserved? You know, I tend to look at the total body of work. I mean, I'm a big believer in this idea that the greatest ability is availability. And so if you're going to give Zion credit for all the wins when he's on the court,
right,
you also have to dock him for all the losses when he was off the court too. But, you know, in terms of like which player is better, who should have been the number one pick, who's having a bigger impact, to me, all the hype that you're describing about Zion is totally worth it. It's totally justified. I mean, this right. guy's been an absolute monster ever since he came back in January.
Yeah. Yeah, this has been building up since he went to, before he went to Duke. So it's due. It is due. I admit that. It is due. It's just some people, like you just said, some people might think that just because of hype, he might win a Rookie of the Year. But he's putting in the work. He is putting in the work for it. And I believe he is a better player because he's dominant. He's coming into the league, and he's not afraid of anyone. Like, he recently played LeBron. He went straight at LeBron. I think LeBron showed out more in that game to show Zion, I'm still here, because LeBron went off that game. But Zion is standing his ground. Some people thought that Zion would come into the league and just be mediocre, saying he can't do this, he can't do that. He's working on his footwork. His footwork is getting better. I mean, he you can't stop him down low. It's crazy. He's a dominant player already.
No, there's no question that LeBron's trying to send a message to Zion. I mean, they've played both times. LeBron's played phenomenal now both times and tried to send a message. I mean, look no further than that dunk the other night that Zion has, and LeBron comes down the other way and pulls up from, you know, almost half court.
Yes.
You know, draining that three. I mean, again, it's just this idea of like, look, this is still my league. I don't want to let go.
Right.
But you're right about Zion's fearlessness, man. We saw it against Giannis too, where he's, you know, he takes that one rebound away from him in the paint and in traffic. And it's like, we never see anyone do that to Giannis. I think Zion, he has a very high basketball IQ, which gets overlooked. He has a great motor and he's very unselfish. And I just credit whoever his high school or AAU coaches were, because it would have been very easy to just like let this guy be a physical marvel and just do whatever he wants to do. And he clearly got some really good coaching along the way because he plays the right way.
Yeah.
He plays for his teammates. He's not selfish and he doesn't coast. And when you can dunk like he can dunk and, you know, get by virtually anyone with your quick first step and your incredible second jump.
Right.
Like, it would be really easy to take shortcuts, and he just doesn't take a lot of shortcuts, and I respect him for that.
Very true. Jumping back to the East real quick, the Nets are in the A spot right now, even though they're probably getting swept first round. But I just want to talk about them holding down that spot with Kyrie being in and out all season and now completely out, and we all know Kevin Durant was out from the beginning. I think I want to take my hat off to Spencer Dinwiddie for holding that team down and LeVert. Can you speak on?
Yeah, for sure. And look, I mean, Jared Allen too has had a nice year. But here's my big take on the Nets, and I think it's pretty simple. You know, they talked about a gap year, this idea that like, okay, Kevin's going to be out the whole season, so like you can just kind of get a pass for this season. And I don't believe in that concept at all. I think whether you're just in your daily life or you're an NBA team, you're either getting better or you're getting worse. And what I saw from the Nets this year, unfortunately, because they were kind of caught up in, is Kyrie going to play? Is he injured? Is he not going to play?
Yeah.
I thought the Nets actually got worse as an organization. Now, that's nothing against those individual players who you mentioned, who definitely are positive takeaways and had nice seasons.
Right.
But the whole point of this year was to, like, develop a chemistry and a camaraderie and a culture that you could bring Kevin back into.
Right.
And right now, when I think about the Brooklyn Nets, I have no idea which of those guys are going to be back next year. They may need to make some trades. Kyrie came out with his list about who's in the core and who's not in the core.
Right.
And I think that kind of, potentially splinters the locker room, or at least makes people ask questions about it.
Right.
And they just never really gelled in a meaningful way. And so, I mean, definitely they have some nice younger pieces who I think are going to work really well with Kevin Durant back.
Right.
But I think this Brooklyn team is really, really, really relying upon KD to be the savior. And I think that's tough because he's coming back off the Achilles. It's going to be a while since he's played basketball. He's going to need to get himself back into shape. And there's always consistency issues with guys when they're coming back from that injury in terms of, it takes them, months sometimes to be able to do it every single night. So I guess I'm a little bit pessimistic on what these Nets could be, because when they signed Kevin Durant and Kyrie, I think a lot of people said, oh, title contender, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be more complicated than that. Like, if they come into next season and they just, wind up being like a second round playoff team,
right?
That wouldn't really surprise me. And I hate saying that because, like I said, I got my start writing about Kevin Durant, and
right.
I think he's one of the most underrated great players in NBA history. But I just think that the dynamic and the organizational structure and all that stuff is just a little bit off.
Right. Yeah, I can't wait for Kevin Durant to get back. The game misses him, just like the game misses Steph Curry, even though it's not as major. But we need all the superstars. We need them all.
I mean, we felt it at All-Star Weekend, right? When you had guys like Kemba Walker or Kyle Lowry out there late in the games, and the whole time you're just thinking, man, like, this is a really fun fourth quarter.
Right.
But imagine if KD and Steph were
out there right
now.
Yeah, and Clay.
Yeah, and Clay. Same thing, yep.
Yeah, definitely. It still doesn't seem real. We just recently lost Kobe. Can you remember where you were when that happened, when you found out the news?
Yeah, I was actually in New Orleans getting ready to cover Zion's third game.
Okay.
And I had so much fun watching Zion's first two games. I was like, you know what? I need to extend this trip. Rather than going home to LA, I want to watch Zion play again. And so it was that kind of like, falling in love with the new star type feeling. Like, that's kind of where I was mentally. And then, of course, you get that phone call, or you start seeing the reports, and it's just an absolute gut punch. And I got back to L.A. the next day. I went to the crash site, went to a lot of the memorials.
Right.
Kind of tried to take the temperature of the city. And, I mean, the city is still in mourning. Everywhere you look, Kobe murals, signs for him and Gigi. The outpouring of support has just been overwhelming, and it's been going for a month straight. It's not going to stop anytime soon. It's just a different relationship between a player and a city than I've pretty much ever seen. I was first moved down here to LA in Kobe's last season, the farewell tour year. And as I said, they won 17 games that year, but Kobe went undefeated when it came to the press conferences. I mean, every single press conference afterwards, he had just people eating out of his hands. He's taking questions in three different languages. He's responding in three different languages.
Right.
I mean, it was just this superstar level phenomenon that we basically never see in the NBA. And, even when you get a guy like Michael Jordan coming up and giving a speech like he gave at the memorial.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that tells you what level Kobe's on.
Yeah. Kobe had a major impact on a lot of people, not just NBA, all over the world. I was so looking forward to speaking to him at the his NBA, his Hall of Fame enshrinement this year. It's classy, class act by the Hall to induct him anyway, but he's going to be missed by a lot of people, a lot.
Yeah, no question. And I think that a few people have made this point, like, it sure would be nice if we could hear his speech, because, I think people look at Michael's speech and it's like, he came off a little bit bitter, but I mean, to me, I thought it was a great speech, because that's exactly who he is, right? I mean, it's that same personality is what drove him to be so great. And with Kobe, I mean, the Black Mamba stuff was no joke. Like, he came up with that because that was like who he viewed himself as, his kind of his essence as a person, right?
Right.
And as a competitor. and to sort of hear him articulate that in a speech and go up there on stage and do it, it would have been amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I've probably seen him at more than 100 press conferences, but still, I would, you know, I'd give a lot to be able to see him give that speech.
Definitely. He's made me flash back to Mike's press conference speech when he started out as a coach. Make sure he made him know that he messed up when he cut. Ben, thank you so much for joining me on NBA Panel, man. I'll do this again when you're available. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, and best of luck with the show, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the season.
You too. Thanks a lot. Yes, that was Ben Golliver, Washington Post NBA writer. Thanks for joining me again. Catch you next week.